sponsored by the Laborers Union of Missouri.
Hello and welcome to Business Beat, KBIA's weekly look at business topics in mid-Missouri. I'm Nick Adams. Coming up later in the show, we'll give you a rundown on the special session ending last week. But first, farming is an expensive and risky business. A mid-sized farmer could easily spend $500,000 planting his crop. Farmers are fiercely fighting to keep government subsidies for crop insurance. Harvest Public Media's Kathleen Masterson tells us why.
Traditional crop insurance, the kind our grandfathers might have had, is called yield insurance. It protects farmers when their crops are wiped out by a hailstorm or a flood or pests. It's been around for years, and the government has programs that subsidize it. But nowadays, farmers face just as big risks from volatile markets as they do from drought.
Farming itself is, it's Las Vegas on dirt.
That's Steve Rutledge, chairman of Farmers Mutual Hail Insurance Company. His company sells this newer crop insurance designed to protect farmers from market losses. It's called revenue insurance. It actually guarantees the farmer a certain income. Should market prices drop, the farmer can get a payment. The dollar amount is based on average grain prices and the farmer's past yields.
It's probably the most significant innovation in the federal crop insurance program since it began. Over time, it's become so important that 80% of the insurance sold now is revenue coverage, or includes the revenue component.
The government started subsidizing this kind of insurance in 1996, but purchases have ballooned over the last decade, in large part because, well, the government threw more money at it. In 2000, the government started paying about 60% of the premium instead of just 42%, says Iowa State University economist Bruce Babcock.
So what Farmers' Choice is, should I buy full coverage and the taxpayer is going to pay 60% of the cost of that full coverage? Well, of course I'm going to buy full coverage. And if you took the subsidy away, would a farmer make the decision to buy full coverage? Well, some would, some wouldn't.
So how many acres are we talking about here, Frank?
This would be on the Hazeldale farm.
Hazeldale.
It should be 70 acres.
On a windy, sunny day in western Iowa, claims adjuster Tom Borral is visiting farmer Frank Seidel's field. He gets out a tape measure to measure the grain bin circumference and figure out just how much Seidel harvested after his field was hit by a hailstorm. Seidel has insured his crops at 80%, coverage that includes both yield and revenue insurance. Back in the office, Borrell calculates that in this one field, the hailstorm killed about 20% of his crop.
It looks like on this unit, his loss is going to be more price than bushels.
So the damage isn't enough for him to get a yield insurance payment. But soybean prices have come down some since last spring. So Seidel will likely get a revenue insurance payment, which could be about $1,700 for that field alone. Now, the insurance isn't cheap. Seidel's paying $18 an acre for soybeans and $30 an acre for corn for his 1,400-acre farm. But the government is paying even more. And that has some worried. Kathy Ozer of the National Family Farm Coalition says putting more taxpayer dollars into crop insurance programs is basically sending it to private insurance companies. Since 2002, the government paid out $20 billion to private insurance companies. But that could change. President Obama recently proposed a plan that would trim about $8.3 billion from the crop insurance program over 10 years. That has companies like Farmers Mutual Hail worried. For over 100 years, the company sold private crop insurance, independent of any federal government program, says Chairman Steve Rutledge. But in 1999...
Then it finally got to the point where we couldn't compete any longer unless we made that leap into the federal crop insurance program.
Now, their bread and butter is selling federally subsidized crop insurance. And along with other companies and farmers, they're lobbying hard to keep it that way. I'm Kathleen Masterson, Harvest Public Media.
7 weeks of a head-butting special session ended last week. A tax credit bill boiled down to a long-running battle the Missouri House or Senate could not agree on. Marshall Griffin reports from Jefferson City.
Back in late July, House and Senate leaders flew around the state holding press conferences to announce that an agreement had been reached on a tax credit bill that included the Aerotropolis proposal to turn Lambert Airport in St. Louis into an international air cargo hub. But once the session began in September, some fiscally conservative senators announced that they had not been consulted on the deal. One of them, Republican Jason Crowell of Cape Girardeau, immediately began a move to block its passage.
But right now, this is just special interest stuff. Right now, I mean, I invite you once again, tell me how many jobs this is going to create.
So what do you say it's going to create?
Zero.
President Pro Tem Rob Mayer and other Senate leaders slashed the warehouse incentives from the Aerotropolis proposal in order to bring Crowell on board and get the bill passed. House leaders opposed that move, however. They then made changes of their own that the Senate objected to, namely removing expiration dates or sunsets on the state's two most expensive tax credit programs, low-income housing and historic preservation. The House passed their version and sent it back to the Senate, which rejected it and sent it back to the House, which voted to appoint conference committee negotiators and then sent it back to the Senate again. Mayer responded to that bit of legislative ping-pong by ending the special session.
We're not reining in tax credits, but we continue to issue more and create a greater obligation to the state. So at some point, there needs to be reform. They need to be reined in. Certainly, a seven-year sunset is not an unreasonable proposal.
But try telling that to House Speaker Stephen Tilley. He says tax credits create jobs, and for that reason, they should not have sunsets tacked on to them.
If you put people to work, they pay more taxes, the revenue within the state coffers go up. If you eliminated every incentive that the state had, that wouldn't change the fact that Kansas, Arkansas, Iowa would have incentive programs.
The failure to pass an economic development bill also resulted in other bills not surviving the special session. The most surprising side effect, though, was the death of the bill to move the state's presidential primary from February to March. Marvin Overby is a political science professor at the University of Missouri, Columbia. He says the failure to resolve the presidential primary issue could be more embarrassing than deadlocking on tax credits.
The Republican leadership was unable to sort of get a reasonable bill passed. I guess now we're going to have a primary that doesn't count.
And Overby says the GOP's failure may be the Democrats' gain.
Probably Governor Nixon looks better in comparison, although... You know, it's not so much what he did, it's just that he doesn't have his fingerprints as much on the failure of this legislative session.
But House Majority Floor Leader Tim Jones says the governor deserves a share of the blame for a mostly failed session.
The governor seems to be the closest to the senators and the most aware of what happens in that body.
But a spokesman for the governor says it was the inability of the House and Senate to resolve their differences that deprived the state of additional economic development tools. Only two bills passed during the special session, the Facebook fix and a funding mechanism for creating high-tech and life sciences jobs, and both were signed by Governor Nixon. In Jefferson City, I'm Marshall Griffin.
Thanks for listening. I'm Nick Adams. Remember, podcasts of this show and all our shows are available at kbia.org.